Hello, it's Ward Green here. It's December 7th, 2022. This is video number 3 for today. It's 18:28 hours currently, and I'd like to play for you a selection from a concert which was conducted, I believe, November 25th, was it? Yeah, November 25th this year. So, 12 days ago now. And it's featuring the violinist from Romania, Costel Nitescu. And he's playing with the Yosho Stefan trio of Volker Kamp on double bass, Sven Jungbeck on acoustic guitar, and, of course, Yosho Stefan. And this is It Don't Mean a Thing If You Ain't Got That Swing.
Und ich hoffe, das wird jetzt auch honoriert. An der Violine, der wunderbare Costel Nitescu. Nur, damit wir das auch auf Band haben, für die Nachwelt. Viele fragen immer, wer ist denn der Gitarrist, der auch die ganze Zeit die Ansagen macht? Also nicht, dass man sich denkt, Yosho Stefan Trio, was könnte das bedeuten? Also ich bin Namensgeber dieser Formation aus Mönchengladbach mit dabei. Yosho Stefan, vielen Dank. Immer noch strömen Leute hinein, man fragt sich, wo kommen die alle her? Oder gehen die immer raus? Also das, ich habe das gar nicht beobachtet. Ich glaube, erst zum Getränkestand und dann wieder zurück, wieder zum Getränkestand und zurück. Ich freue mich schon auf den zweiten Teil, wenn hier randaliert wird. Aber das werden wir ja dann gleich sehen, wie trinkfest die Hannoveraner sind, ob die es mit uns aufnehmen können, wenn wir in der Pause einmal starten. Letzte Nummer vor der Pause, It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing. Vielen Dank. Thank you.
That was from Yosha Stefan in Concert, but I think it's called, yeah, it's called Yosha Stefan and Friends here in the description. And I suppose it was a live stream on that day, but I missed the live stream, but I watched it yesterday, I think, was the first time I watched the whole stream, actually. I did watch it, but I didn't watch it. I knew about it for a while before I watched it. That was what, I was busy, I guess, with other things. But it's got a lot of good things in it, and it ends up at the end with Limehouse Blues, which is really spectacular also. But there's so much really wonderful, spectacular music in this. All of it is very, you know, I mean, there are no words to describe it. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's exquisite music. It's inspiring to me to listen to it, so I'm more than happy to be a spectator for something like this as far as music goes. But I don't listen to a lot of music, I'll say that, because not much music really does inspire me. Now, classical music, that's true. I can listen to classical music, and I probably should listen to it more, because that does inspire me quite a bit. They play a song by Stefan Grappelli later on in this concert that's absolutely wonderful. I guess I can't resist playing it for you, actually. Where is it, though? I don't know where it is. I think it's after their break, I think. So they took a break. Well, they stood up. This is their encore. Where they stand up, that's the encore. So I know it's before the encore. And where the fiddle player stands up at this point, this is, I'm not sure when that is, which song that is. This might be it here. This might be Stefan Grappelli here. Oh, look, there's a bass playing a solo here. There it is. When Yosha looks over at him, that's where the solo begins. At least that's usually what it means. That's the only time Yosha ever looks at the bass player while they're playing, is when the solo is going to be played. Unless they're not playing at the time. You know, he can look at him during the breaks in between songs, but if he looks at him during a song, it means it's his turn to play a solo. So I have a feeling. I wonder if I can actually find the song. It starts with plucking on the violin or fiddle. It starts with plucking, this song. It doesn't start with the bow. Oh, here's the break. Okay, so they come back after the break. There's a break at about halfway. It's maybe 20 minutes long or something, I forget. Or what, let's see, 20, what is it? 140? 110. It's about half an hour. About a half an hour break. Yeah. Okay. So when they come back after the break, what do they play first? That's Hungaria. They started with Hungaria after the break. And then, so it, and they played. They do play Bossa Dorado also during this concert. It's really, really, really good. I want to play this other song if I can find it here. Stefan Grappelli. Is this it? This might be it. No, I don't think so. Let's see. See where it is. It's very slow loading. Maybe a lot of people are listening to it now.
Das war ja gerade Django's Tiger von Django Reinhardt.
That was Django's Tiger, yeah, the tiger. Django's Tiger song. The name was, I guess it was, the song is called Django's Tiger, maybe, I'm not sure, but it's by Django Reinhardt, that song that they just played, I guess. I think, yeah, I remember that he gave the name at the end. Sometimes he gives the name of the song at the end, and sometimes at the beginning.
Blockflöte spielen. Das ist eine der wenigen Kompositionen von Stefan Grappelli.
This is it.
Und wirklich sehr, sehr schönes Stück, das der Kostel auch vorgeschlagen hat, ist Les Vaseuses.
Les Vaseuses by Stefan Grappelli. So that was so. Well, what was the word I was thinking of when I was listening to that? It was I had a word that came to mind. Oh, I know. No, I was just going to say I love this. That was what. Those were the words that came to my mind. I love this song and this performance. It's just really beautiful. But I love it. I love it. So I wanted to share that. And there's a lot more good stuff in that concert. You can go listen to it if it's still online. It should be. It's on the channel Jazz Club Hanover by Gartenheim. And it was a live stream, and there was a fairly small audience there. They do show the audience at the end. So you can get an idea how big the audience was. It wasn't very big, but the amount of applause that was generated by that small audience was, I mean, nothing short of enormous, I would say. The amount of applause that they generated during this concert, the volume of it, the loudness of it, the applause was very loud. Now, let me see. Oh, I don't have my notebook. I think I might have a note. I want to check my notebook. I'll be right back. What can I play for you while I'm gone? Maybe I can play something from the stream. Let's play Limehouse Blues, maybe. Or let's just continue the flow. Continue the flow. Okay.
Dankeschön. Vielen Dank. Wir kommen jetzt zum letzten Stück des heutigen Abends. Oh. Ja, aber ich sag mal, heute ist wieder ein Publikum da, wo ich weiß, das sind leere Drohungen meinerseits, weil ich denke, da wird noch was gehen von euch. Ihr seid wirklich unheimlich gut drauf, das muss man sagen. Und das ist aber hier in Hannover immer so. Also wahrscheinlich, weil...
Okay. I'm back. I just wanted to see if I have any notes here. Right, well, that was on violin. It was Costel, or Constantine is his full name, I guess, but Costel is his, what they call him, and his last name is Nitescu. He's a Romanian violinist, and that was the last song I played for you was Stefan Grappelli. Stefan with an E at the end and Grappelli with two P's. And the song was called Les Valseuses, the song that I loved so much. Now, I also, of course, I loved the first song as well. It's just that I wasn't so familiar with this one by Monsieur Grappelli. And also... the rest of the performers there, that was the trio, the Yosho Stefan trio that were playing, along with Costel Nitescu on violin. So that was today's mini concert, I guess, and I'm really thrilled to share it with you. I think we're going to try and do our study now. Little children, I hope you're... ready. I was going to say I hope you're willing, but that's up to you. I can't determine that. We can't decide anything that other people have freedom to do. We don't get to decide for other people what their freedom is. I mean, even for little children, of course parents have to make decisions on behalf of their little children, but no one can really determine what the little children themselves are going to decide about anything. I mean, we're all free. We all are free, and as we get to be adults, we of course are, in fact, expected to make our own decisions, and we don't, unless we're in some way a ward or under the guardianship of someone, we don't have really any choice. We're obligated to make our own decisions. That's a responsibility that we have because of the freedom that we have. But because of the fact that we've been given free will, that obligates us to utilize our free will. But it's, of course, it's not an obligation so much as it's a freedom. It's a wonderful freedom that we have. It's a wonderful... But, of course, we don't always appreciate it, that we do have this free will. And so the other thing, the other aspect of it is, though, that if we don't allow others to have their free will, if we don't allow others freedom to make their own choices, then we lose our own free will. We lose our own freedom. Our freedom is dependent on our... It's this live and let live, the saying that we hear as a cliche that we've heard, possibly. Some of us have heard it many times during our lives, the idea of live and let live, which means we live ourselves, but we let others live as well. We let other people live their own lives. We let them do their own thing and make their own decisions. And that's really how we gain the freedom to do our own living, to make our own choices and to be our own independent people, is we have to. We must give other people their freedom. Otherwise, we will not have our own freedom. We will not be able to be free ourselves, because, of course, we will be spending our time and our effort on trying to influence others, or trying to make other people, trying to compel other people to do what we want, which is really not the right approach at all. In fact, it causes us to lose our freedom if we do that. It's actually the exact opposite of what we want, which is we want to be free ourselves. And sometimes we think that by forcing other people, or by trying to force other people — we can't force other people — but by trying to force them to do what we're doing, that will give us more freedom to do what we want, because they won't be interfering with us doing what we're doing. If they're doing the same as us, they won't be interfering, because they'll be acting the same as we are. But that's false, because if we don't let them be free, we're violating this, the golden rule, which is do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. If we're able to force other people to do what we want, then they're going to be... I'm uploading a file here. I'm just checking to see if this is the right thing to choose. It needs to overwrite a null file that has nothing in it. That's perfectly normal. What was happening? Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. That's right. Yep. It's not obvious, but if we are forcing other people to... If we're trying to force, we can't force. We cannot force anyone to do what we want, unless they're very young children and we're their parents. But we can't force people to do what we want. And even if we're the parents of very young children, we can't always force them to do what we want anyway, obviously. But we really can't force people to do what we want. But if we try to do that, we're diverting some of our energy away from our own free will. And if we do that, we then lose that free will that we have. It's a very, very sensitive — what's the word? Fragile. It's fragile. It's a very fragile thing, free will. And we can lose it very easily, because free will is... Part of the idea of free will is, of course, in order for our will to be completely free, we must be able to devote all of our energy into it. Otherwise, our will not be completely free, because the only way to have free will is to make sure that we're making all the decisions. In other words, no one else is controlling it, but we are. So that requires all of our attention. We can't divert it onto other people and onto our trying to force them to do things. So free will, and also the other thing is, if we're trying to force other people, then we're implicitly giving them permission to try to force us to do what they want. And, you know, if we ever succeeded in forcing someone to do what we want, that would make us very, you know, much more likely to become someone who's forced to do what somebody else wants us to do. Just because, you know, what goes around comes around, turnabout is fair play. We've given them permission to force us, in other words, because we've tried to force them. It's the same thing as it's us saying that it's okay to force people to do what you want. If we do that, we're giving permission to other people to try and force us to do things. So it's this freedom. It requires us to give other people freedom, to allow them to have freedom, which is not always easy, and it's not obvious that it's the right thing to do either. But we must give people freedom. We should not try to mandate other people's behavior, which in some countries that's the rule of law, you know, that in some places there is a very restrictive or oppressive dictatorship where the leader is trying to compel people to do things and, you know, and restrict the people's options, but also compel people into doing certain required things that must be done. That reminds me, we no longer have the requirement of getting a registration for our automobiles in Ontario, in Canada, which was a requirement that we used to have, and they lifted that requirement. We no longer need a registration for our auto, our cars, or any kind of vehicles that are driven on the road. We don't need any registration, so that means we don't pay anything for that. We don't need to keep the registration in our wallet or in our car when we're driving it. We no longer have any requirement for any license plate on our vehicle or any registration in Ontario. So that was a significant change that happened. And also, I have a battery. I said that I didn't have, I said I had an older battery, I believe, in one of my videos recently. I said that the battery for my tractor is very old and on its last legs or something to that effect, I said. But that wasn't right because I did buy a new battery last year, I believe it was. Last summer, probably. I went all the way to Findlay Creek, Canadian Tire in Ottawa. I bought a battery and I named it Oscar. I named him Oscar. And I have, he's got like 430 cold cranking amps right now. He's way above the 30, much more than the 30, way higher in cold cranking amps than I need for my riding mower, which is my ZTR, which is 300. 300 CCA it requires, or 300 cold cranking amps. It's got 430. So I mean, the Oscar has 430 right now. It's a brand new battery still, and I've been maintaining it. When batteries are maintained, they do not deteriorate as fast, but it requires continual charging when you're not using them. You need to charge your batteries when you're not using them. It prevents the deterioration that comes with sulfation. It just makes your batteries last longer. And they also perform better too, when you're using them, so because they're always charged. These lead acid, I'm talking about lead acid batteries, not any other kind. Other battery technologies will perform differently, but lead acid batteries, they have a very significant problem if you don't charge them up often or often enough. But they also last longer and perform better when you keep them charged all the time. So I have like about four different battery chargers. I've got three different battery chargers, plus I have a DC power supply which I can use as a battery charger. So I have four battery chargers that I'm using right now for the different batteries that I have. I've got four different batteries. Three of them are car batteries. One of them is an older one, and two of them are for my two cars, and I have the lawnmower battery. So I still have the old battery, but it finally completely failed on me. That's why I got a new one, but I'd forgotten that. And that's what happens when, for example, when you're in post-traumatic stress, or when you're very busy, plus you have some post-traumatic stress. In either of those circumstances, you can forget and underestimate the good things you've done. Like I, for example, replaced that battery. I bought a new one called Oscar, but I forgot that I did that. I forgot that I'd actually done that. And it actually feels, you know, it feels good to realize that you've done something that you'd forgotten. That you've been doing more than you thought. You did more good things than you realized. That's a good feeling, but it's not really the way we want to live. Actually, we want to be, you know, we want to be appreciating the things we've done, and we want to be thinking about what we've achieved, and be not that we want to be proud of it, because we want to boast in Jehovah. So we want to be boasting in Jehovah for the things we've done, and we don't want to be forgetting the things that we've achieved. But we want to be rejoicing in them, count our blessings and rejoice in our blessings. Those are things that are, I mean, that's what does it say that in Ecclesiastes? To see good for all your hard work. That's to eat and drink and see good for all your hard work. Let's see what it says. That's the gift of God. To see good for all your hard work. So it's very important. And also there's nothing better for us than to rejoice and do good. And that we should eat and drink and see good for all our hard work. So if we miss out on that, we're really missing something. So that's why I feel it would have been better if I remembered that I bought that new battery, and that I actually have a brand new battery now, and I've got all my batteries are now fully functional, fairly new, or almost brand new. And it feels a lot better to be that way, because when you have one battery that's near its last dying day, you are always aware that you might have to go and buy a new one at some point, and that you have to be ready for that at every moment. It's not as good of a feeling as having some fairly new batteries and serviceable ones. So anyway, this is Psalm 67. Today's December 7th, so we're up to the 7s now. And it's a very short one. It has 7 verses. Look at that. I didn't know that. This is Ward Green again, and we're about to start this study, I believe, with a prayer to Jehovah. But we don't know who wrote the psalm either. But Jehovah, help us to understand what we can from your word today in our study. And help us to be receptive with open hearts and minds, so that we can take this information in such a way that it might help us to be happier as people, and to be better in everything we do. In Jesus' name, amen. We sometimes forget that the power of God's word is, of course, more than just uplifting us and building up our faith, or inspiring us or making us feel better about things. It's more than that. The word of God can also impart wisdom to make us more effective in the things that we do. It can give us new insight into the things we're now working on, and it can cause us to realize that we have better things that we can be doing, or that we can do things better by changing our approach to what we're doing or how we're doing it. And these things can be actually conveyed to us through the words of the scriptures. That's an actual fact And it happens so many times to me when I'm reading scriptures that I know it does happen to other people as well. And it happens, in my case, I know it happens extremely often when I'm reading scripture, that I get new insight into what I'm doing. So this psalm is to the director on stringed instruments, a melody, a song. Of course, they're songs. It's in the Psalms. All of the Psalms are songs. And here it is. God himself will show us favor and bless us. He will make his face shine upon us. Selah. That your way may be known in the earth, your salvation even among all the nations. Let peoples laud you, O God. Let the peoples, all of them, laud you. Let national groups rejoice and cry out joyfully, for you will judge the peoples with uprightness. And as for national groups on the earth, you will lead them. Selah. Let peoples laud you, O God. Let peoples, all of them, laud you. The earth itself will certainly give its produce. God, our God, will bless us. God will bless us, and all the ends of the earth will fear him. That's it for Psalm 67. But it's interesting, I was saying, count your blessings. I wasn't aware the word bless was in this psalm, not in my conscious awareness. I had no idea. But I was talking about blessings today for some reason. And there it is. See, my subconscious knew all this, but I have to give Jehovah the credit because he's the one who reminded me of this somehow and made me talk about blessings before we read about blessings. But the thing is, part of it is the brain that he gave me, the mind that he gave me, and the brain he gave me was also from him. And so the subconscious mind is something he gave me also. So we can boast in him for a lot of things. All of those things and many more, I'm sure. But God himself will show us favor and bless us. It says, right, it even says it in verse 1, bless us. I missed that in my conscious awareness. But then it says, I thought that this was very interesting somehow in here. Somewhere in here, there's a comment I wanted to make. Well, your way, he's talking about, you notice Jehovah's name is Yahweh? His name is Yahweh. That's one pronunciation of Jehovah, Yahweh. Your way, that your way may be known in the earth. Your salvation, even among all the nations. But it's talking about God's way may be known, but that Jehovah's way may be known among the earth, among people of the nations in the earth. That his way may be known. That's why it says, let peoples laud you. Because when we laud Jehovah, it's implying Jehovah's way may be known, will become known. It will become known because people are lauding Jehovah. If we laud Jehovah, that will, if we say praise Jehovah, hallelujah all the time. If we do that, every time we do that, that draws attention to Jehovah, and then Jehovah's way is going to be known through the fact that people hear us praising him. That's what it's saying. It seems to me that that's what's being said there. Let all the peoples laud you. But then the cry out joyfully. That's what I wanted to comment on, was the cry out joyfully, because I felt like crying out joyfully when I heard the song today, Les Valseuses by Monsieur Grappelli, and I thought, I just loved that song so much, I wanted to say I loved it. And saying you love something is in a way, that's a joyful cry. Even if you don't say it at the top of your lungs, it's still a joyful cry to say I love something. You know, it's a joyful cry. It really came from my feeling of joy that song gave me. Even though it might not have been a kind of, not all instances of joy are the same. You know, they're not all exuberant. They're not necessarily exuberant, but sometimes they're more subdued and very profound at the same time. And that can be crying out joyfully too. I believe that. That's what this reminds me of when I read that. So that's what I've learned today, is that crying out joyfully can be profound and subdued. And I didn't realize that until today. That's what I would say that I learned. So it's significant to me that I learned that. But what did you learn today? From this psalm, I mean, what did you learn from this psalm today, little children? Let peoples laud you, O God. Oh, that's a repeat of this. And then also verse 6, I might want to comment that the earth will give its produce. Remember, we've been reading about how Jehovah prepares the earth. He prepares the earth so that it will produce. He prepares it by giving it rain, right? By giving rain in the furrows to make the earth ready, to get the earth ready for the seed, so when it does sprout, the sprout can find its way. It can get water, so it knows that it should sprout, first of all, because it gets water. And then it will also be able to find its path through the soil, because the soil will not be so hard-packed, because it will have been prepared by plowing and by rain. These are the things that ensure that the earth will give its produce, right? Those things that prepare the earth for crops and for giving produce. So Isaiah 47, I think we're up to 47. There's another alert here. It's wanting to replace this final file, which is so many 120k. It's replacing a 0 bytes file with one that's got some bytes in it. So that's what I want to do. I wouldn't want to replace it if it was already fully there, or if it was partially there, I'd want to resume if I could. I wouldn't want to overwrite, but because it's 0 bytes, I want to overwrite it with the full file. But I don't know why this is an error. In a way, this is an error that occurs. Don't know why this happens, but it's safe to do it. Just don't know why it requires my attention to be here, or otherwise it would not upload without my approval. I could just say always just overwrite, but if I say always overwrite automatically, then there might be times when I just want to resume, when there are. And there are, if I have a power failure, I want to resume. So there's always ways we can improve. That's the other thing. We can always improve in everything we do. So Isaiah 47. Now, when I say we can always improve, okay, don't take that in the wrong way. That doesn't mean we should be always improving every day in everything we're doing. That's not what I'm saying. It's not good to change everything every day, necessarily. It's good to have a routine every day. And try not... It's good to have a lot of constancy in many of the things we're doing, so that when we do change something, we can see the effect of that one change. I'm not saying we should change everything every day, but we can learn something every day. And we can always improve in every aspect, but that doesn't mean we should improve in every aspect every day. That's not what I'm saying. In fact, I'm actually saying the contrary. I don't believe that's true. We should not change everything every day. That would be the wrong approach, because we would lose control. Meaning, when you do an experiment, you want to have a control. That means, yeah, you want to have things that are not changing. But you also want, you know, if you did an experiment, you'd want to have some things that were happening according to the normal or control group, right? So if you were doing an experiment with, let's say you were growing plants and you wanted to see what the effect of adding more fertilizer or less fertilizer or whatever was on those plants, you'd want to have some that you gave the standard amount to so you could compare, because there might be other changes that are affecting those plants that have nothing to do with the fertilizer, right? And so you want to be in control using a control group, or in other words, you want some things that aren't changing to compare with. So this is true if you're taking vitamins, you don't want to change all your vitamins in one day. You want to change one vitamin and keep all the other vitamins the same to see what that one vitamin does when you change it. So that's an experiment with it's not, that's not really having a control, but that's just called reducing the number of variables, because you've got one variable, it's restricting the variables to one. The other things are constants, but there's a variable. So minimizing the number of variables is a very useful thing. It's similar to the concept of having a control, but it's not exactly the same thing. The control means, you're using identical test subjects or test objects, and those objects are all of them being treated as part of your experiment, but some of them are treated by doing nothing to them. So that's the control. Is the ones you do nothing to are the control, because they could be affected by something outside that you're not aware of or something, but they're your control. But you're not going to try to affect any change in those control subjects or objects. And then you have the groups that you're trying different. So you might have plants. Some of them you give more water. Some of them you give more fertilizer. And some of them you give more sunshine. And the control group, you give the same amount of water, fertilizer, and sunshine as a control to see what they're doing compared to how the others are doing. That's the concept of a control, right? And when they do experiments on human beings for nutrition or whatever purpose they want to do it for, they have a control group where they give those people a placebo. So they don't really have any treatment, but they think they might have a treatment because they're given a placebo. That's the control group. And then the group that is being treated with the nutrition is receiving the treatment. How are we doing? 52 minutes. Okay. So it's a long study today. I just keep finding things to say when I don't really mean to. I'm very tired, too, because I worked in the basement 2 days in a row now on, quite physical activity. But, my stamina is going to go up as long as I'm feeling good health-wise. My stamina is going to increase over time by doing this exercise. So I want to be able to work a full day, a full 10 hours or 12 hours a day or whatever I can do without getting tired, but that's going to take some, preparation and work on my health, on my physique, my conditioning, But that's, you can't work on conditioning unless you have the nutritional basis for it in your body, in your body's constitution, the constitution of the body based on nutrition and based on the work you've done prior, or the exercise you've done prior. But I don't believe in exercise without nutrition. You have to have the health. You have to have your health first. You have to have the health. Then you can have, and the health is what your constitution is, and then you can add exercise to that. Or you can do things like fasting too, but you can add those things once you have your health. But you want to get your health through nutrition first. That's the thing. And I'm learning about MK4, which I'm taking now with MK7 as well. So I'm taking them both together now because they're both essential vitamins. And if I just deprive myself of one just for an experiment, that's not a valid experiment, in my opinion, because I'm depriving myself of nutrient that I need. I don't believe in depriving myself for the purpose of experimentation. That's not right. It's not ethical, in my opinion, in nutrition, because my body will be suffering and I'll be losing days off of my life. My lifespan will, or my life, is it the lifespan? Or is it the expectancy? It's lifespan, I guess. Life expectancy is different from lifespan, I believe. Yeah. Right. I think the average, the lifespan is the average of infant deaths included. So if there are infant deaths and then all the other people, they're all averaged together, the life expectancy is much lower because of infant deaths. So if the life expectancy, if the life span in ancient times was only 40 years, their lifespan was 40 years, let's say. Is that life expectancy? No, that's their life expectancy, yeah. If the life expectancy was 40 years, if whichever one it is, if we're talking averages, then whichever one that is, the average, including, you know, young children who are born and then they die of some, you know, infection or something, which happened very frequently back in ancient times in some places. So if it includes the infant deaths, the average is much lower. They might have a life expectancy of 40 years, but that doesn't mean they didn't live to 80, to the age of 80. They did live to the age of 80. Many of them did, but the average was 40 because half of them died when they were infants or something. So it halves it. The life expectancy goes down depending on how many infants die. And that's what is very misleading about the modern day when they talk about life expectancy or whatever it is. I think lifespan is something different. Okay, let's look it up because we have to be sure. I have to be sure what this is. I have to be sure I'm using the correct terminology. Define lifespan. Is it one word or two, first of all? Okay. Life expectancy. I believe it's life expectancy we're talking about, an average, right? You expect them to live a certain amount. Yeah, there it is. The British male has a life expectancy of 77. So it's an average, obviously, right? If it's got a decimal point, it's 77.6. It's an average of all the people who die, how long they lived. That's what it is. So life expectancy is this misleading statistic that they quote to us. They say life expectancy has gone up. All that means is they prevented infant deaths. It doesn't mean that they've made people live longer at all. In fact, the contrary might be true. People might be living less long and dying younger in their old age, but because there are fewer babies who die, it's seeming as though people live longer because of life expectancy being higher. That's just a completely deceptive statistic, and you need to be very aware of that. It's completely deceptive in the way they present that. That's why I'm mentioning it, okay? I just thought of that. So now, now I don't know what I was talking about exactly. Oh, yeah, so I was talking about vitamins and how I believe it's wrong to deprive myself or anyone of all the needed vitamins based on doing some experiment to see whether I can make myself more healthy or seeing what the effect is of some vitamin. I mean, true, if I wanted to know the effect of that one vitamin. No, actually, it's not true. That's not a valid experiment. If I deprive myself of necessary nutrients, then the experiment's not valid anyway because I'm not giving my body an opportunity to function. So I can't deprive myself of certain vital nutrients and do an experiment with one nutrient. That's an invalid experiment to start with. It's wrong. It's just invalid. It has no validity because the body can't use the nutrient if it doesn't have the other cofactors. So you have to, you don't have to, but it's not, I believe it's not ethical to deprive your body of any nutrient on the grounds of doing an experiment. It's just wrong. You need to give your body, I believe, all the nutrients, and your body should be given all the nutrients, definitely. For every, in other words, every vitamin and mineral that you know your body needs, you should give that to your body every day. Every day, because if you don't, you then can't study what happens if you add another vitamin or another element, another nutrient that is essential that you might need. You could experiment with it if you have all the other nutrients, can you do a valid experiment? That's absolutely crucial. But I'm not saying that everybody is going to take all the vitamins right at the beginning. No, So the time you're going to experiment is when you first start taking one vitamin or mineral. You're not going to start by taking 10 different minerals or 10 different vitamins, unless you're taking salt with all the minerals in it. Like Himalayan salt has all the minerals. There's an example. You can take all the minerals at once by eating that salt. But you're not going to take a supplement. If you've never taken any supplements, you're not going to. You might take a multivitamin. That's the only time you're going to take all the supplements. You're not going to take. You're not going to take one capsule of calcium and one capsule of magnesium. Maybe you would take those two together, and vitamin D. You might take those three together. But you're not going to take omegas with that. And if you've never taken any vitamins, you're not going to add all these things to your diet all in one day. You start with the calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D. And you see how that goes for a while. Then you add the omegas later. You don't add it all together, right? You start with one or the other. You don't start with omegas. You could, but you need to get calcium because it's the most important nutrient in the body. So you need to do that first. So calcium comes first. Magnesium and calcium and vitamin D come first. They're the first element. But you don't take them without vitamin K2. That's what I've learned. You can't take those three without K2 because you'll be hurting yourself. You can take them initially and they won't hurt you, probably, or maybe not much. But based because of what I know now about vitamin K2, based on that, I know that it's probably going to hurt you if you don't take K2 with it. Vitamin K2 is necessary for the proper absorption of calcium and magnesium and the usage of it in the body, and also the utilization of vitamin D depends on vitamin K2. Otherwise you'll get vitamin D building up toxicity in the body. So K2 needs to be taken with, so four things need to be, five things, because you need to, you can get two different forms of vitamin K2. So there's five different things you can take. Three, magnesium. There's calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D. Those are three, and then there's the two forms of vitamin K2 you can take. Those five things go together. They would be the first thing I would add to a diet in terms of starting any new supplementation. They would be the first three, five actually, the first five things. I wouldn't just start with some other thing. Like I wouldn't just start with, well, you could. I mean, you can always take vitamin C whenever you get sick. If you're not taking any other supplements, you can still use vitamin C. So there are exceptions like that. You can use vitamin C in gram quantities when you're sick. And I've talked about that before. And you can take vitamin B12 also. That's another one you can take, vitamin B12. But I wouldn't, you know, if you need vitamin B12, you should start it right now. You don't have to wait to start calcium. But if you can get B12 and you can't get calcium, I'd still start the B12. I'm just saying, if you're going to put a plan into action, it's better to start one at a time or one section at a time, like calcium and all of its cofactors, and then omegas, and then something else. Like you could take the multi anytime, but I wouldn't. The reason I wouldn't start them at the same time is one simple reason. You don't know if that particular vitamin is going to be good for you or how it's going to affect you or if you're allergic to anything in it or if it's, you don't know how your body will react. You need to start one at a time with each. So if you take calcium with magnesium, vitamin D and K2, you don't start all of them together. You start calcium first, you wait a while and see how it affects you. You'll probably get constipated and then you'll take magnesium. That should alleviate the constipation. But then you'll, If your body doesn't react badly, you'll take vitamin D because you know you need that. But give each one of these things enough time to make sure that they're not hurting you in some way that you're reacting to it. Because if you don't, then if you take all these vitamins at once and you have a reaction, you won't know which one caused it. So you need to start, go one at a time. And then if something happens and you react to something, then go back a step. Take a step backward and see whether that makes that reaction go away again before you decide what to do next. But you need to go stepwise. So that's why I'm saying one at a time for each of these. So you have to, if you're just buying a supplement and you've never eaten it before with your food, you take it with food usually. If you've never taken it before, you need to do slow, gradual beginnings, tests on your experiments for safety. You need to be safe. So Isaiah 47. Come and sit down in the dust. Come down and sit down in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit down on the earth where there is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans. For you will not experience again that people call you delicate and dainty. Take a handmill and grind out flour. Uncover your veil. Strip off the flowing skirt. Uncover the leg. Cross over the rivers. You ought to uncover your nakedness. Also, your reproach ought to be seen. Vengeance is what I shall take, and I shall not meet any man kindly. That was speaking to the virgin daughter of Babylon, that section, that paragraph. Verse 4, there is one repurchasing us. Jehovah of armies is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit down silently and come into the darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans. That would be Babylon again. For you will not experience again that people call you mistress of kingdoms. I grew indignant at my people. I profaned my inheritance, and I proceeded to give them into your hand. You showed them no mercies. Upon the old man, you made your yoke very heavy, and you kept saying to time indefinite, I shall prove to be mistress forever. You did not take these things to your heart. You did not remember the finale of the matter. And now hear this, you pleasure-given woman, the one sitting in security, the one saying in her heart, I am, and there is nobody else. I shall not sit as a widow, and I shall not know the loss of children. But to you, these two things will come suddenly in one day, loss of children and widowhood. In their complete measure, they must come upon you for the abundance of your sorceries, for the full might of your spells, exceedingly. And you kept trusting in your badness. You have said, there's no one seeing me. Your wisdom and your knowledge, this is what has led you away. And you keep saying in your heart, I am, and there is nobody else. And upon you calamity must come. You will know no charming against it. And upon you adversity will fall. You will not be able to avert it. And upon you there will suddenly come a ruin that you are not accustomed to know. Stand still now with your spells and with the abundance of your sorceries in which you have toiled from your youth, that perhaps you might be able to benefit, that perhaps you might strike people with awe. You have grown weary with the multitude of your counselors. Let them stand up now and save you, the worshippers of the heavens, the lookers at the stars, those giving out knowledge at the new moons concerning the things that will come upon you. Look, they have become like stubble. A fire itself will certainly burn them up. They will not deliver their soul from the power of the flame. There will be no glow of charcoals for people to warm themselves, no firelight in front of which to sit down. Thus, they will certainly become to you with whom you have toiled as your charmers from your youth. Thus they will certainly become to you, with whom you have toiled as your charmers from your youth. They will actually wander, each one to his own region. There will be no one to save you. That's the end of Isaiah 47. The point there that I wanted to be clear about, I'm trying to find it here. Lots of children, yeah. Right. Oh, Babylon, that's right. Babylon, they came and they conquered Israel. That's right. They came and Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem and conquered it and defeated it, destroyed it, in fact. But before he destroyed it, he also took captivities. He took people into captivity before he destroyed Jerusalem. The date of its destruction is very well established too. It's 587 BCE. I have to keep repeating that because there's a lot of evidence for that, which I'll be presenting over and over again because it's so, you know, it's so useful to know these facts about how we know these dates, and it's so important to know why the chronology we have is believed to be accurate. But one of the ways is that we have the dating of the chronology from the business documents of Babylon that have been unearthed, and they show that all the kings who ruled from 604 BCE down to 539 BCE were thoroughly documented in the business documents with every year of every king, you know, recorded. And those years of those kings agreed exactly with the king lists that we have in terms of how many years each king was supposed to rule in the different king lists, which were apparently produced independently as well. And we have other evidence beyond that even. We even have other evidence. There's other evidence besides that. We have more than that. We have other evidence that we will be talking about as well, which is astronomical. We have astronomical evidence that because the Babylonians recorded their stars, and so that's mentioned here too, right? The idea of recording stars is mentioned, but it's a very important point I wanted to make, a distinction I wanted to bring up here. Even though the stars and the planets and the moon do prove the date of Jerusalem's destruction by Nebuchadnezzar in his year 19 as 587 BCE, even though that's proven from the moon and the stars, the movements of which were recorded at Babylon, because they were very much worshippers of the heavens, they recorded these things. So even though those things do establish the dating of 587 for Jerusalem's destruction, also they used the stars in a way they shouldn't. It's okay to use the stars in that way, but they used it to worship the heavens and to predict the future. That was what they did wrong. So in verse 13, they gave out knowledge concerning things that will come upon you, that would come upon them, that they thought would come upon them because of their worshiping the stars. They tried to gain knowledge of the future from the stars. And here Jehovah says that won't work because he's going to stop them, Jehovah knows that that doesn't work anyway. You can't predict the future from the stars. And that's why he says, let them stand up now and save you using the moons and the things in the heavens, such as the new moons. People can try to prophesy or try to predict the future using the heavenly objects, the heavenly bodies like the moons. But that will not work. They have become like stubble, he says in verse 14. These people who are predicting using stars have become like stubble. They will not be able to predict the future at all. And so, but that was back in Isaiah's time when these people who, these sorcerers or these people who were in verse 12, sorcery and spells and false worship of the heavens to predict the future. That was a common thing back in Isaiah's day, and it was something that Jehovah needed to address in the case of Babylon because they were so guilty of it. But that doesn't mean that we cannot use their records to ascertain the time period. That's a different thing, you see. We're not predicting the future. We're determining the past using these records, not predicting the future. It's a different thing entirely. And that's a very important distinction because there's so many times in the Bible that you think, well, for example, you think that because Christ died on the cross, therefore you should wear a cross on your body in some form of clothing or jewelry to signify that you're a Christian, you wear a cross. But that's not the same. Just because Christ died on the cross, that's not saying that it's a good thing to wear a cross, or that it's the right thing to do to show you're a Christian to wear a cross. That's not the case at all. In the same way here, just because it's good to use the heavens to determine the dating, it's not good to predict the future using it. Well, in the case of a cross as an ornament of jewelry, that's not a good thing to wear because it doesn't show the fact that Christ had no desire to die on the cross. It was not something that he wanted to take on himself. He only did it because it was necessary, and it wasn't something that, it's not showing respect for Christ to wear a cross at all. It's the wrong understanding of the situation. The cross is a figurative idea of suffering, but it's not something that we need to adorn ourselves with. We don't need to present an image like that of what it means to suffer. That's a use of images, which is not something that Jehovah likes. He doesn't like us to make an image of anything like anything under the heavens. He doesn't want us to make an image of that's like anything under the heavens, because then we might worship that object. So he doesn't like images. That's in the Ten Commandments, right? We're not supposed to make any images because we might worship them. So that's a case of making an image that we don't want to do. It's just something we don't want to do. But also if one brother gave an illustration, Brother Kobeluk, I think it was, who gave this illustration. If you had a friend who was executed by the electric chair, would you then wear a miniature electric chair on a chain around your neck or on a bracelet or on your wrist or something? Would that show respect for your friend who died, who was executed by the electric chair, if you wore that image on your body? That was the question he asked, that was the question that somebody else asked somebody who was wearing a cross. So if we think about it, I don't think that many people would wear an electric chair icon or ornament of jewelry on their body as a sign of respect for a friend who died. If it's your friend, you're not going to treat it in that way. You're not going to view it that way. And Jesus is our friend. That's the thing. If we're Christian, if we're truly Christian, when we're Christian, we don't We don't view Jesus that way. He's our friend. We don't need to remind ourselves of the painful way in which he died and adorn ourselves with some kind of painful image that of which Jehovah doesn't approve anyway, because he doesn't approve of images. But the whole idea is anathema to Christianity. It's wrong. It's wrong according to Christianity, and yet we see so many people who are supposedly saying they're Christians or they're wanting to be Christians, but they don't understand the first thing about it, about what it means to be a Christian, because they're wearing ornaments with images of the cross. It's just very common, isn't it? We see it everywhere. People do it, but it's more of a style rather than an expression of faith. It's a fashion statement. It's a fashion statement. It's not a statement of faith. That's what it ends up being, because it doesn't have the proper authorization, you know, in the it has the wrong feeling, it has the wrong everything about it. It feels wrong, because it is wrong according to the principles of love. We don't treat our friends that way. So this is Ward Green. We're summing up another study today, and I had the workshop update today as well. I showed how I was dimensioning the very first lumber that I've gotten from my own yard. Well, is it the very first that I've ever gotten from my own yard? Well, the first that I got from my ash tree, I guess. Well, I've gotten some other lumber from the ash tree, but I mean the first that I've I don't know if I've used any of it to build anything, so I'm not sure yet. I'll try and figure that out. But it was the very first dimensional lumber of 2x2, or that size or bigger, I think, that I processed from the ash tree. But I might have got a 1x4 or something, but it wasn't dimensioned with any. It was non-uniform, whatever I got before, I think. And I don't think I used it to build anything at all. I'm not sure what I used it for now, or if I've used it. But I'm processing my tree now. That's the thing. And this is the first. What do you call that? Lumber, I guess. Maybe, is it? It's framing lumber or something. It's not. It's bigger than siding. This, I believe, that the piece I did yesterday was the first of this of the size of dimensional lumber that would be considered sort of framing, or 2x2s, 2x3s, something like that in size. It's not even 8 feet long, but that's okay. But it's because it was the very first piece. So I'm starting to process the lumber, and that was the second video was showing that. So it was called Dimensioning Lumber, I think. So it is December 7th, 2022. It's 19:52 hours exactly. And I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you very much for all your attention. God bless you. I love you. Goodbye for now. Praise Jehovah. And have faith in Jesus. Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, as we've heard many times, because of the ransom sacrifice. His death redeems the sin of Adam and thereby opens the doorway and the possibility of everlasting life. Bye for now.